Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants on this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. We'll have a gay old time. Virgie joining me at the top of the show for a quick little segment about an upcoming charity event is friend of the show and famous voice actress, Stephanie Shea. Hey, Stephanie.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing. So you've got, let's talk about this. You've got another We Heart Japan event coming up. And
yes, we do.
For people who don't know, We Heart Japan is your charity organization designed to raise money for victims of the tsunami back in the spring. And yeah. I think, you know, I was thinking about this, and I think people tend to, and this happens with pretty much every natural disaster, the further you get away from it, the less and less people donate, the less and less people talk about it. Can you tell us a little bit about the ongoing need there and why, you know, you're still obviously this organization is near and dear to you. What's important? What's urgent now? What are you focusing your efforts on now?
Well, I mean, we wanted to wait. You know, it's been, let's see, it was in March, so it's been about 6 months, yeah. About half a year, a considerable amount of time. And we understand, like, the economy is tight. So in terms of giving, you know, you can only give so much. So we wanted to space out our events. But also, we wanted to not give up on this cause because, like you said, with all kind of disasters that happen, initial outpouring is great, but the hardest part is the rebuilding and the ongoing efforts. Basically, the region in Japan that was affected by the tsunami is devastated, and there needs to be entire industries kind of been wiped out, and for that area it's about rebuilding right now,
right.
And that is, and as you know, as anybody who's been involved with Katrina knows, that takes a long time and a lot of work and a lot of resources. So it was very important to us that every once in a while, as long as there's a need, and there's definitely still a need, that we keep this kind of in the forefront of at least the anime community, you know, because we love that country and that culture so much that we want to make sure that we can give back in a substantial way. And I think it's really a positive thing for the anime community. You know, in the last few years, there's a lot of talk about illegal downloads and some people have been very, I don't know how to say, like, some industry people are embittered or kind of jaded by the whole state of the industry. And I just felt like, you know, I want to show that anime fans and anime industry can get together and do something really positive, you know?
Right. So, I think that's been a success so far, and it's great to see that you're still plugging along with this. So, what's happening? We've got an event coming up on Saturday. What's going on? Where can people see it, and what's up?
So, it's October 1st, this Saturday, and it is in Hollywood. So, we're calling it We Heart Performing for Japan. It's pretty much a stage show. With various performers, almost like a variety show, if you will. We have singer-songwriter Mari Ijima is going to be playing a set. And for those of you Macross fans, you'll know her as Minmay from that show.
Mm-hmm.
We also have stunt performers, actors, and motion capture actors, TJ Rotolo and Dan Southworth. They are going to be doing a live demonstration of what it's like to be a real life Sentai supervillain. Both of those actors worked on Power Rangers in the past, so they both probably even got their start learning about stunt work from that show. So they're doing that act, and then last but not least, we have the original dub cast of Cowboy Bebop. Wendy Lee, Steve Bloom, Melissa Fawn, Bo Billingsley, and Mary Elizabeth Flynn returning to read live on stage an episode of Bebop. So,
oh, that's cool.
We'll have a Q&A afterwards. Yeah, the event starts at 5, because from 5 to 6 we'll have a reception with refreshments as long as they last, as long as the free refreshments last. And the performers will be there signing autographs and whatnot. And we'll also have a raffle, and we have tons of really great prizes for the raffle. And then the actual show starts at 6 and goes from 6 to 8. So that's pretty much the gist of it. There's two different ticket prices. The general admission is $40, and then there's a premium ticket, which is $60. And basically that gets you a reserved seat in one of the first three rows, and it also gets you kind of a goodie bag with some giveaway stuff. I have some stuff that I have signed from some voice actor friends, and we have stuff donated from various companies, so there's a little gift bag in there. Also, with each admission, there is a free postcard that comes with it. Basically, because the organization We Heart Japan, the group is pretty much run by either anime industry people or ex-anime industry people, we have a lot of connections, and other girls involved in the organization team, she was able to get an original art drawing from Gurren Lagann, and that was basically gifted us to use for our event. So it's not something you could purchase anywhere. It's not something you're going to find in an art book, you know. So it's exclusive to one of our events, and we've designed a postcard. So I believe the one that you get with your ticket is the one of Kamina. And if you get the premium ticket, you also get the one of Yoko. And if you put the two postcards together, they actually make a Japanese flag in the background, so it's kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool. So where exactly is this in Hollywood?
It's in Hollywood. It's at the Arena Stage Theater, which is part of the Theater of Arts. It's on Las Palmas. The probably easiest, if you have the Egyptian Theater, the best way to basically figure out how to get there is if you go on the We Heart Japan website. It's just weheartjapan.com. Mm-hmm. And all of the links to, there's a link to ticket sales. I really encourage people to buy tickets ahead of time. It's just going to make things go a lot more smoother. And the theater is relatively small. It seats less than 100. So the sooner you get those tickets, the better, just in case, you know, we sell out, and that would really suck, especially having the Bebop Pass there. I don't know when that will ever happen again. It's been over 10 years, I think, since they worked on that show.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, okay, cool. So people can go to weheartjapan.com for all the details, and of course, you guys take donations year-round, right?
We do. I don't think we have a specific donation link. We'll have a link to the charity of choice that we give to, mm-hmm. and they have a donation link, and so we can just, you know, you can just give to them. It's JCIE. And the cool thing about that charity is their fund that they've set up actually goes directly to Japanese charities on the ground. So you're not really going through, like, a big middleman. If you donate to some of these huge international charitable organizations, while they're wonderful and they're great, it can take a little bit longer for the money to actually get on the ground. And sometimes there's more percentage of what you give goes to administrative and operating costs.
Right. Yeah. You can go on forever about the bureaucracy of charity, but
I know.
Yeah.
It's the way the world works. And in terms of, like, people can't make it, as long as they spread the word and kind of just, like, follow us on Twitter. It's WeHeartJapanXO. And just kind of stay tuned for updates, because we do many events, and we've made T-shirts. We haven't exactly gotten the online sale function of that, you know, all put together yet. But once it's up, you know, we'll let everybody know.
Okay, awesome. All right, and for you, what can we look forward to seeing you in that's coming up?
Well, I think even though we're done recording K-On! Is still being released, so that's fun. And there's extra songs in English as extras on the discs. That's fun. Still working on Gundam Unicorn. I think we just hit the halfway mark. And it's pretty crazy. That's losing a lot of sleep over that. But just wrapped on episode 4, I think, a couple weeks ago in terms of recording. And subtitles just wrapped, like, I think, like, last week or this week. So that's coming out soon. And funny note about episode 4, it was pretty tough because we got the video very late. And we knew we were getting the video very late because apparently, and it never occurred to me, but it makes total sense, is that in episode 4, the characters go to Earth. And when you have a show set in space, you have less to animate because all the backgrounds are black with white dots.
Right.
But once you put it on Earth, the animators have to draw in backgrounds, and it takes a long time. So this last episode 4 was a really tight deadline schedule. We got materials pretty late because of that. And last but not least, I just been cast in Bakuman, so that's a fun little show.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll look forward to all of that, and good luck with your event this weekend and your charity efforts, and it's always great to have you on.
Thanks a lot, Zach.
Hey, everybody. New York Comic Con is right around the corner. October 13th through the 16th at the Javits Center in beautiful Midtown Manhattan, you'll see the sights and sounds that all of nerddom has to offer, with an unbelievable amount of anime-related programming. Dying to attend but don't have tickets? AnCast can hook you up. I've got 2 free general admission passes to New York Comic Con that I'm literally just giving away. Giving away! Literally giving these away. 2 free general admission passes to New York Comic Con. We won't fly you there, we won't pay for your hotel, but we will get you in for free. All you need to do is email me, Zach@AnimeNewsNetwork.com, that's ZAC@AnimeNewsNetwork.com, with the subject line, I enjoy anime and also comics. The subject line must read, I enjoy anime and also comics. A winner will be selected at random by October 5th, 2011, and you will have 2 free passes to New York Comic Con. See you all in the Big Apple. Okay, we're back. My guests this week for a little roundtable chat fun are Associate Editor Gia Mannery. Hey, Gia.
Hey, how you doing?
Answer Man, Brian Hansen. Brian.
What's up?
Yeah.
Have a go. Yeah.
Whiff.
Yeah. Swing and a miss.
And former A&N critic, but you can still find her at thatguywiththeglasses.com. It's Hope Chapman. Hey, Hope.
Hi there.
So, normally I do kind of a League of Extraordinary Super Nerds thing with Mike Toole, Darryl Schratt, and Justin Vegas, and I figured I'd try to form a, you know, an alternate team, more like an Avengers kind of a situation. So I wanted to have you guys on just to shoot the breeze. It's a big news week, and unfortunately we were recording this before the big news has been revealed, so I obviously can't reveal it. But I do want to talk about what we've all sort of been watching lately, because I haven't had any of you on in quite some time. So, Gia, let's start with you. What have you been watching?
I've been working to catch my way up through number 6, which I think is over now, but I'm still a few episodes away from the ending. I'm really digging the dystopian sort of drama mystery thing that's going on, but I continue to be surprised at just how much it's pandering to the yaoi fangirls. Like, I mean, obviously it doesn't bother me, but it feels a little distracting sometimes when all of a sudden there's like 5 full minutes, and this is, you know, a 20-minute episode, 5 minutes devoted to the guys waltzing, and you're just kind of like, is there a purpose to this? Is this going to come back somehow? It hasn't yet, but I guess we'll see, because at 9 episodes in, I'm not going to, you know, give up until I get through the ending.
Yeah,
but it's gotten a little weird.
When I saw the first episode of that, I didn't get the BL vibe from it at all. Like, didn't even think that that's where it could go. And maybe I'm naive, and just when I see 2 male characters in the same room, I don't assume that it's going to become yaoi, but...
Especially when they're, like, 11.
Yeah, right. So, I had no idea it was going there. Did you? When did it start becoming that?
Well, it's clearly going for, like, the super heavy implication, but I don't think it's really gonna explicitly go there or anything. I mean, because there is a female love interest. So, you know, I didn't expect that, especially. I feel like it's kind of hedging bets, sort of, that maybe they felt like the story in and of itself wasn't strong enough, or maybe they just needed to pad the episodes a little or something. Like, it just feels so... I don't know. I mean, the relationship between the 2 characters is really interesting, and you kind of get the feeling that maybe if they had done, like, some really long, sweeping thing, it could have been almost like a I hesitate to even bring it up, but like a Xena Gabrielle thing where it's sort of like you can really make up your own mind because they got so much time to build it, and it's also very ignorable. But since, of course, it's only an 11-episode show, they really wanted to make sure that if you wanted to go there, you totally have your fodder for it. And if you don't, eh.
Does it feel crass or like inserted specifically for that audience? Does it organically, does it work? I mean, you're talking about a 5-minute waltz scene for no reason.
Some bits do and some bits don't. There's a moment, for example, where one of the characters, Chion, kisses the other dude on the lips briefly, but that actually ties into the story of what's going on in that particular moment. I'm not going to go into the details because that's getting into spoilers. But then, like, again, that waltz scene was just sort of random and overly long. Like, I don't know what was going on there. And it also turns out, of course, that Nezumi, who is the guy who looks kind of like the main character from Macross Frontier, is actually exactly like the main character from Macross Frontier in that he also plays women in stage shows.
Okay.
So that's also an element that sort of pops up out of nowhere and hasn't been readdressed, really. So, I feel like they just felt like they wanted to throw something in there to really make sure that they got at least that demographic in. But sometimes it works.
Okay, well, I mean, so overall, obviously, you're enjoying the show.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm enjoying the show. I'm interested in seeing where the drama goes. They had kind of this weird moment where they were kind of going, it made me think of Avatar. They had, like, a shiny, sparkly, kind of magic-looking tree, and, like, these forest folks' homes were getting destroyed. And I'm like, wait, what? But, again, 9 episodes in, I'm going to wait for the payout and then kind of make my final decision then. It's definitely been entertaining so far.
Well, that's good. So I guess, you know, we'll wait for your verdict on those final two, because that's pretty crucial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
We've been keeping up with Tiger and Bunny, except, again, for the last, like, 2 episodes. That's been very big in this household. Honestly, I think I would have fallen off the wagon if my boyfriend were not, like, almost every Sunday, oh, Tiger and Bunny, Tiger and Bunny. I enjoy it. But it didn't turn out to be quite the sort of character study I'd kind of anticipated from the first episode. It became a lot more kind of an ongoing action-y thing with sort of character episodes breaking up the main story. So, yeah, I'm definitely enjoying that, but I probably wouldn't have gone all the effort on my own, personally.
Interesting. Now, the final episode of that's aired already.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet, so I don't know how it ends.
Yeah, well, I don't either. I'm way behind. But, you know, based on your current attitude, I guess it does depend on those last 2 episodes. But, I mean, could you see yourself watching a second season?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe. Not quite
well,
willing
again,
to commit.
I'm positive that my boyfriend will totally put it on our TV, and I will watch it and enjoy it. I'll have to see the last 2 episodes before I know for sure whether it's something I would explicitly get up off my butt and do.
Huh. All right. Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, that show, I'm really looking forward to those DVDs, so I can sit down and watch it on, or Blu-rays, so I can sit down and watch it on Blu-ray, because that's kind of how I want to watch that show. So hopefully there will be some kind of home video announcement real soon. That's what I'm hoping for. Brian, what have you been checking out?
Well, I was kind of mulling on whether or not to cancel my Netflix subscription after they, you know, went nuts.
You weren't gonna do it. You were not gonna cancel it.
Well, I was thinking about it, and then I I kind of went on a tear because I realized that I never really noticed beyond just like the random pop-ups that Brian likes this and some obscure foreign movie, and then because I watched an episode of Inuyasha once, there's like just a bunch of garbage. Yeah. So I actually tried to watch some of that garbage. The first thing I watched was, I watched 2 episodes of the new Golgo 13, which I had forgotten about, as I think most people did.
I can tell you one guy who hasn't. Anyway.
Yeah, there's one guy in the back just going, yay! it's ugly. It's ugly as hell. It is the ugliest piece of ugly ever to walk the ugly street. It is awful looking. But it's not terrible. Man, I loved Golgo 13. I loved the movie that Osamu Dezaki did. I love the manga that Viz has put out, piecemeal. And, of course, the awesome Nintendo game where you can have sex with women to replenish your health. But it's sort of like, you know, kind of a greatest hits thing, but all the episodes are the same. You know, it's basically there's this holy bizarre crisis where there's hostages, and Golgo only gets one shot, and he's got to get his pistol or his rifle or some other thing, and just a lot of talking heads going, the wind's changing direction, how is he going to make it? And then at the last second, it's some guy going, you're all going to die, and then his head explodes. So,
that's a lot. After two episodes, that pretty much sums up the GoGo franchise, I think.
Yes. Definitely.
He's only got one shot. Yeah, that's every GoGo episode.
But he's always like, he's like in Vietnam for some reason. He basically travels through time and just assassinates every major political party in the entire globe, which is awesome. But the show is not that great. Unless you already know kind of what GoGo 13's about, you're not going to really care. And plus, like I said, it's horrifically ugly. It is just, I don't know what it is about older design shows. Like Cobra had the same problem, where they try to update them using modern animation and it just looks chunky and gross.
Yeah, it looks weird. There's something about it that's just off. Like, those character designs are designed to be animated in the 70s. And when they're animated in the 2000s, it kind of looks like you've taken like a Datsun, like a 1978 Datsun, and just dumped a bunch of turtle wax on it and drove it out. Like, it's hard to describe, but that's what it feels like. Like, heavily polished, junky old design.
You know, I will say the Trigun movie actually, I think, kind of evaded that by mostly making the animation also, at least to me, look kind of old school. But all of a sudden it would shift into these CG panning shots, and it was really sort of distracting.
It was. That Trigun movie was a weird mesh. Visually, it was a weird mesh of, wow, this looks like the 90s, with sort of 2000s theatrical budget. And I the stray observation that I talked about Badlands Rumble on the last show, but the Nightow's entire design philosophy seems to just be put big screw heads on everything, and giant lapels and big screw heads
and shoulder pads, lots and lots of shoulder pads.
Yes, and shoulder pads, and bingo bango, that's Trigun's entire
everybody's
design philosophy.
Everybody in that show is super lanky, but they're all so broad.
Yeah.
Except for Millie is the big one. Meryl is the little teeny weeny one. She's like the tiny character in the show.
But right. She's still broad. She's got huge shoulders.
Yeah. She's got those kind of like Paulette things, whatever they're
like,
called.
She's an 80s businesswoman or something. I don't get it.
Pauldrons, yeah. anime fantasy and pauldrons, don't get me started. But anyway, go on, Brian.
So then after that, I watched Gwyn Saga.
I'm very curious about that.
Joy bells.
Oh, my God. I didn't even make it through an entire episode.
Really?
I don't know if you could just... You could just call Gwyn Saga a show. It is... I can't think of a more boring, dull, uninteresting take on anything fantasy related. It's just so piecemeal and so it's very pretty, but just so dull. And then, you know, the main character is a dude in his underpants with a tiger face. It's kind of ridiculous.
Is it a tiger? I thought it was like a leopard.
Yeah, it's a leopard cat. Tiger thing.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the franchise has to have something, because there's like 11 billion of the novels out in Japan.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I get, is that the novels are very well respected, and sure, that's fine, but I guess it's probably because you're only imagining the magical tiger mask superhero from another dimension, who of course has amnesia and doesn't know who he is, and just spends the entire episode going, I don't know who I am. Who am I? Where am I from? I've got a tiger face. And it like moves when he talks, and it looks like a puppet, and they don't animate it well, but the rest of the show looks great. It's just boring. Aside from the Tiger Man in diapers.
Wait, does the mask move when he talks, or is the mouth just always open?
It is always open, but sometimes when it does a close-up of his, you know, because he's, you know, being all mopey because he doesn't know who he is, and it just, like, it moves a little bit. I don't know who came up with that decision. It's really not good.
Only in close-up are you there close enough to see his jaw moving the mask a little bit, I guess, maybe?
I don't know. It's sort of like, you know, Big Bird, the Sesame Street puppet, where it's just obviously a hand reaching up to the top.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm curious about that show. Everyone said, oh, if you like Berserk, you'll love Gooing Saga.
No.
No, you don't think so?
Absolutely not. Berserk had, like, character and a plot. I mean, this show is a lot of plot, but well, no, absolutely no character. There's no redeeming characters in that show. Everyone's just so cookie-cutter and boring, and it's probably something that just got lost when, in the adaptation. I'm sure the books are great, and I think those a few of those have been published here, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately one of those series that's never going to be finished, because I believe the author passed away before.
Yeah, she passed away a year or two ago.
So, oops. Yeah. So they'll have to come up with their own ending if they can, if they're making future seasons of the show. But yeah, I saw like a little bit of that, and it was just dry as a bone, and so I wasn't interested in it. And then I somebody linked me this. I guess it's the second half of the dub of the show, the second season, and they said that they were huge fans of the show, and they're like, oh, I got so angry at the dubbers for this, lost their mind, and I was like, oh, what is this? And in the second half of the show, apparently. Sentai didn't care either, because it was just this big clip reel of these most ridiculous deliveries, and like they injected line. Okay, Stephen Foster did this. I'm gonna get the punchline out of the way. Right. And they injected like lines of Yaoi subs text into an otherwise serious scene. They have a guy doing a Zoidberg impression for a random character in the background for no reason. It's just ridiculous. And I was like, well, I guess if you didn't like the show, that might be a good way to get some mileage out of it. But
that seems yeah. Now look, I like a good prank like the rest of them, but that to me seems like too much of a fuck you to the people who are buying Gouin Saga.
Because exactly, because it's only the second half, apparently, according to this person sent it to me, because I certainly didn't keep up with it. But yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, first of all, like, I don't think Stephen Foster is particularly funny. Maybe he's a really funny guy in person, but none of his comedy dubs have ever particularly struck me as being hilarious.
They're way too obvious. It's really lots of silly pop culture jokes that you would see that not even Robot Chicken would handle, because they would be too obvious and, yeah, just way too on the nose.
Yeah, and doing that to a show that probably doesn't deserve it, is only really being watched by its own diehard fans.
Yeah.
Just doesn't seem right. Because that show does have, you know, a very small but devoted fan base.
Well, and what I was going to say is, like, I obviously didn't like it, but if you're the sort of person who you're just so hard up for a very straightforward, fantasy-derived show, this will probably fit the bill. Because it is handsomely produced, and, you know, it didn't seem like it shits the bed at any point, except for the parent horrific parody dub. But, you know, if that's your thing and you just got to get your fix of something fantasy related, you know, go ahead and watch it. I mean, Lodoss Ward's not, but what is?
Well, it's on Netflix, right? So what do you have to lose?
Yeah, exactly. and then the last thing I checked out was I watched the new Kashurin Sins, which I really liked.
Yeah.
It's just, it delivers everything you want out of a Kashurin show, which is just really slick, awesome-looking animation of a dude fighting giant robots made out of bizarre parts and just cutting them up with his fists. And, yeah, it's not smart entertainment, but it totally fits the bill if you're, like, 2 in the morning and bored and probably drunk and need something to watch that requires little effort aside from just turning on your PS3, so...
Or if you want, you know, something that involves robots fighting and a lot of kind of emo attitudes, but doesn't involve Gundam.
Yeah, well, it's
also a good option for that.
And the thing about the emo-ness, for whatever it is, it looks very gloomy. And sure, there's a lot of, you know, the Kashurin being kind of mopey, but it's not overwrought and it's not overbearing. Like, it's silly. Like, it's sort of a silly mopey. It's all window dressing. It's not the sort of thing where it's like, you know, Death Note, which is just dripping with emotional distraughtness and everything like that. It's just he's sad, and then there's a robot that shows up and goes brr, and he kills it with this, you know, magic karate chop that slices it in half, and it all looks really cool. So I dig it a lot. I'm probably gonna watch as much of it as I can before I get bored of watching that, which probably won't happen.
I saw just the first episode, and I had no idea what was going on. Do you have to be familiar with the other, like, elements of the Kashurin franchise for that to make any sense? Because I didn't know it was a sequel.
No, I would say not, because the only other Kashurin thing that I've seen, other than, you know, playing Kashurin and Tatsunoko versus Capcom, is the really boring live action movie that came out around 2001. Yeah.
Yeah, I watched the first couple episodes of Kashurin Sins, and I hadn't seen anything related to Kashurin ever, and I was able to pick up basically what was going on. I mean, because they kind of give you the backstory.
I would say it's like a less silly, less obnoxious version of the two Karis OVAs that they that Tatsunoko did a couple years ago.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it. Like, you know, it got a little bit of a mixed reception, but the people who love it, love it. And the people who don't like it are kind of like, eh, not for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a visual feast. It's
yeah, that's what I've heard is the animation is spectacular.
Yeah.
Gorgeous to watch. Yeah. Totally recommend just on that alone. And again, it's Netflix. If you have Netflix, it's not going to take up too much of your time.
No High School of the Dead for you, huh?
No, not my thing. anything zombies. I'm sort of a hipster about zombies. I've been uninterested in zombies for about 5 years now. And I'm continuing to make that a thing.
Yeah, well, I count me in your court there. I'm sick of zombies as well. Like, I can't believe people were actually excited for that Dead Island game. How can you not be tired of zombies at this point?
Like, I like the trailer, but I have no interest in playing the game. Like, I thought, okay, cool, they did something really neat with the trailer, but I would have enjoyed that just as, like, a little short film and then been done with it.
Well, they did. They're going to make that little trailer a movie and just disregard the entire game.
Yeah, but the problem is, are they going to make it a full-length movie? Because then that's way more investment than I want to make.
Yeah, no, they're going to take the they're using the trailer as kind of a proof of concept, and then they're going to make a whole movie based on that. But I'm at the point where if you say, like, okay, so there's zombies, and my brain goes, not interested.
Yeah, me too. Or anything like, even like zombies. If there's anything zombie-like, if there's, like, creatures ambling towards you that just go, no. No, thank you.
Anything that just reminds me of zombies. Yeah, I'm glad I have a great excuse not to watch The Walking Dead since they booted Darabont off the show.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah, that's the one thing where I've just been, like, kind of coyly resisting it, because I will watch it at one point, but it's, like, it's hard for me. So yeah. I just look at it, like, I'm sure that's really good, but...
Well, the first season was really good, and, you know, they made a thing kind of at the beginning where they were like, this is not going to follow the comics exactly. You know, this is actually going to break off and kind of be its own thing. And so, for the most part, you know, fans, as far as I've heard, haven't, like, you know, bitched a lot about, oh, well, they changed this, that, and the other thing, because they made it very clear that they... we're going to do that, but it was I really enjoyed the first season, and I don't know about the second season.
Did wonder ratings for AMC, if I'm understanding correctly. So I don't.
Oh yeah, I did huge, and then like
yeah, I know
AMC's,
I don't
like,
understand the treatment.
All the financial support.
No, it's that whole AMC's just had a very bad year publicity wise. Basically, Mad Men is bleeding the network dry money wise, so they got to take money from everyone else. Which is, you know what, frankly, like, if they have to kill off The Walking Dead for another season of Mad Men, I am 100% fine with that. But that's what everyone's complaining about. Darabont's not a cheap guy. You can't get him for cheap. So I would imagine he was a big part of that show's budget, and that's why he's gone. But anyway, enough about The Walking Dead. Hope, what have you been watching?
There was a brief period where I was rather violently ill, so I had to sit around and just watch TV for a bit. And I thought, well, you know what? Passes the time well when you're just, you know, sitting around and need to digest a whole bunch of stuff. Shonen. So everybody had been pestering me about seeing One Piece because I'd never seen One Piece before. And I decided to start at the beginning, and I learned that this is... I talked to fans, and they're like, why did you start at the beginning? And I'm like, well, because that's what you traditionally do when you're watching a show. And they're like, no, the beginning of One Piece is really boring. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that explains a lot. It gets off to a really slow start. I was kind of surprised because...
I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't
personally
agree with that.
Oh, I wasn't. I enjoyed here's the parts of that I enjoyed. I really, really did. And then it would drag into the very traditional, you know, something that should take 2 minutes takes 10 minutes to happen kind of thing that they do in the plotting of these tournament kind of shows. And I was like, okay, you know, that's a shame because I really like what they're going for with these characters. But it what's his name? Captain Kuro. It's when they first meet Usopp, and there's this big fight between the whole gang and this bad guy who is, you know... The whole point of that arc is just to get Usopp on the team and get them a ship. Okay. It takes way too long. It takes about 12 episodes longer than it should. So... but it's a good show. I'm enjoying it. It just... I did at one point go, okay, where am I supposed to go to? And the One Piece fan told me, oh, skip ahead 30 to this point where it's really exciting. And I'm like, oh, okay.
See, I don't know. Like, I guess if your goal is to get through the whole thing or to zoom ahead, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily skip any of the beginning. I mean, I'm not a diehard One Piece fan. I really like the show, but it's a little bit too much of a time commitment for me. But you're right about the Usopp stuff. That's where it slowed down for me too. It's a pretty slow, kind of boring thing. And frankly, Usopp is not a very interesting character at that point in the show. I didn't really care about him, and the show was focusing on him to the exclusion of the elements I was interested in.
Yeah, I think that was actually a problem with the manga as well, because I haven't watched the anime, but I read the first batch of omnibus volumes that Viz put out, like the first 12 volumes worth, and I felt the same thing about that arc, that the Usopp part really kind of slowed down, and I was sort of trudging through it.
It was funny how immediately the for me, the interest jumped when we got out of Usopp, and then we get into Sanji, and there's only just one, I guess, appearance that he has, the introduction of this character, Sanji, and it was already, more fascinating than everything that had come before it. Yeah. So I was, that was a really, really good way to introduce that character, and so I was more invested in that entire arc just because, that the writing had gotten better all of a sudden, so...
Refresh my memory, is Usopp before or after Buggy?
Usopp is after.
He's after.
Okay, I think that's part of the problem, because at the very first, when you're very first watching One Piece, Buggy's actually really good and exciting and shows you the potential of the story, and then it goes into Usopp, which isn't very good. So it's kind of like this immediate drop-off into boring land from this pretty exciting and entertaining material. Maybe that's the case there. But
yeah, I should say that... the fact that they kept with One Piece, and I'm probably going to keep going with it. Again, I'll have to ask people where the filler is and try to dodge it, I guess, is probably a good sign, considering I never had any time for Naruto or Bleach or any of the various shorter-lived things that have come along. The only big, long-running Shonen Tournament show that I ever really liked was Yu Yu Hakusho. Because it has no filler, it just runs along a nice choppy pace, the characters are great, and so people, told me to watch One Piece, and I was like, So it must be good if I have this much toleration for it, and I really don't have toleration for this kind of show, but it's definitely good for watching if you can't go anywhere for, days at a time, which is...
Yeah.
I think it's hard not to get kind of swept up in sort of just the gleeful abandon of... sanity.
When so many other shonen shows get bogged down in, isn't it hard being a 13-year-old learning magic or whatever? And there's none of that. Even when it gets a little tired or it gets a little boggy, it's mostly just due to that shonen thing where, somebody repeats something that they already said, or they're just drawing out somebody walking up very slowly to, they're going to kill the protagonist. No, they're not. It just takes too long for them to get there. There's that, but there isn't any of the long, drawn-out, ugly angst sessions that you have in a lot of the other shows. It is really a very joyful kind of...
I was going to say that I love One Piece because it is so earnestly bug-fuck-insane. And that's when that show is at its best, is when you've got villains who can turn into 15 different parts, who's a clown... Or, a magic god who rides a cloud who shoots lightning from his giant earlobes. All that stuff is fantastic. It gets very, very melodramatic, which is part of, I think, its problem. I'd say stick with it. Obviously, skip the filler. And, if an arc's kind of dragging along, just skip it, because chances are by the time you pick up the next part, you'll... have all the information you missed repeated to you 15 times because they've got to pad those episodes out.
It happens. It is one of those times where I'm like, I wish I read more manga, because I know this doesn't crop up as much when you read. I'm just not much of a manga person, though, so I have.
Well, yeah, but I'd say, though, since you're familiar with the shonen formula and all that, and you're going to be wary of it, and it definitely crosses that line far too many times for my personal taste, which is why I haven't kept up with all 500 bajillion episodes of it. But just keep going with it until you get burned out of it, because it's really, really fun, especially when it's spot on with everything.
Yeah, when it's firing on all cylinders, it's kind of like, I sort of point to the best parts of One Piece, at least the ones that I've seen that I would call the best parts, are the best examples of shonen that I've seen. That's when it's working perfectly. This is why this formula. Because, when I find myself all fired up and excited about where a fight's going, that show is succeeding as wildly as it possibly could. And One Piece gets me to that point more than any other shonen I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'd say just at the very least, get up to I think it's the Alabaster arc, because that, I think, is where the show kind of hits its stride, and that's kind of where I stopped watching it, because afterwards nothing else was as good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I will be sure to. One of the strongest factors to me deciding to check it out is because I get pestered to watch a lot of stuff, because, I don't know, people think, you know, my life isn't fulfilling enough until I've seen this thing. You guys know what I'm talking about. But out of all the fans who are like, you must see this, you must see this, the One Piece fans were kind of the most... I was most okay with them, because I don't know why. They seem to be sort of a laid-back bunch compared to a lot of the other... I don't know.
Well,
maybe I'm just missing something there, but they were a little bit more laid-back.
They know their show is ridiculous. They know it's completely insane, and it's a cartoon, and so they're not going to get all crazy about it, because it's a show where people's eyes bug out every third panel, you know?
Is it just me, or are there fewer, like, hardcore One Piece haters compared to, like, Bleach and Naruto? Like, I've seen some.
It's not popular to hate One Piece, no.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's kind of interesting.
Because, like I said, it's so earnest.
It's not big enough to be hated upon here yet.
Overseas, One Piece is kind of, like, really, really huge.
It's not in America, though.
I mean, this is kind of a bad analogy, but it is how it's popping into my head. If you're in a mall and you see a Hot Topic and a Disney store, which one are you going to go, like, ugh, and roll your eyes at? Probably the Hot Topic. And the Hot Topic is where Naruto and Bleach are. And One Piece belongs, you know, in an equivalent of the Disney store. It's easy to hate Bleach and Naruto because they feel like, you know, angsty shows for melodramatic teenagers who have boring lives. That's what they sort of feel.
Are you saying that Bleach and Naruto hang out at the mall past hours and try to bum smokes off of strangers while One Piece buys a bunch of Winnie the Pooh shirts? Is that what you're saying?
I would say that that is not inaccurate. That's what it feels like to me. At least attitude-wise, tone-wise, audience-wise. Bleach and Naruto both go down the, Linkin Park... phase, and I wouldn't say that at all about One Piece. One Piece is just 100% sincere and earnest and not at all up its own ass with angst, which I know for a fact, first-hand experience, happens with at least Naruto. I haven't watched a lot of Bleach, but I know it's the same kind of thing. But anyway, anything other than One Piece?
Well, my friends were having a Miyazaki-thon while I was ill, and so periodically I would walk in to join them and to peek at what they were watching. It was new to a lot of I've crammed in a house with a bunch of other girls, and like some of them had not seen enough Miyazaki apparently, so they had to be indoctrinated. So I witnessed this, and the one thing I remember most about popping in, and because you know Miyazaki's not new to me or anything, but Howl's Moving Castle I sat through most of when I popped back in the room, and it's not even close to as disappointing as I think I remembered it being or remembered people saying it was when it first came out. And maybe that's just because of Miyazaki's track record up to that movie, like Ponyo hadn't hit yet. But it's really not all that... I don't know. I remember a lot of people saying, oh, great, well, Miyazaki's losing it. You know, he's not... he's become too self-absorbed in his own ego and his writing's gotten bad. And there are things that don't work in it, like the war subplot didn't need to be in there. It serves no purpose whatsoever, and it really pulls away from the focus on the characters, which is what the whole movie should have been about. But it doesn't kill the movie. It is wrapped up succinctly. At least it doesn't hang there and doesn't go anywhere. I would argue
it wraps up too succinctly. Turniphead just shows up and is like, movie's over. Everything's good. Movie's over. All right, we're done.
Deus ex machina.
Yeah, that's true. It's too succinctly perhaps, but at least it's, you know, not the alternative of where it's like, oh, you were just, you know, flaunting this in here for a message. But to get to the point, there wasn't any point of the movie. It was boring. They had a really great thematic dynamic going between, you know, this boy character who doesn't want to grow up and this girl character who's never really, lived out her youth, blah, blah, blah. And she treats herself like she's an old bag, even though she's 18. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting. I was like, you know what? This really is not even close to as disappointing as most people said it was. Particularly after you see Ponyo.
Yeah, I would say that the one kind of curse on that movie is that it came right after Spirited Away, you know? Which a lot of people was their first and only experience with Miyazaki, and mm-hmm. Howl's Moving Castle, just which I actually still really like, except for that really, really abrupt ending. Just it's not as, it's markedly not as good, and it's certainly not as good as any of his earlier films. And
yeah,
but it's not bad in any stretch of the imagination. It's actually pretty good for most of it, like I said, and it's got some really wonderful, ingenious parts to it, just like any Miyazaki movie has, really.
Howl's Moving Castle is one of those things that I call sort of a fascinating failure. It has a lot of really interesting ideas, like you said, the themes about aging and maturity and that sort of thing. Those are very interesting things, and they're vague sort of half-thoughts in the film, but they are intriguing, and they made me think. The script is a mess. It turns into a completely different movie about halfway through it. Mm-hmm. And it is legitimately a kind of a fiasco story-wise, but that doesn't make the film less fascinating to me. Like, I'm taken with how weird that movie is and how much stuff it's trying to accomplish.
There's an entire, like, what, 5-minute sequence where two old ladies walk up the stairs, and it's not boring.
Right. Yeah.
It's no. Like, okay, well, that kind of does it for me. This is definitely not a bad movie.
Like, Howl's is the movie that I would show someone last out of his films. It's like, okay, so here's where he kind of jumps the rails script-wise, and you start seeing cracks in the facade. Sections of this movie make no sense. It doesn't really follow thematically. It abrupt tonal shifts. It's confusing at times, but it's still a fascinating movie that has interesting things and interesting ruminations to put out there. So I would call it a failure. I don't think Howl's Moving Castle is a very well constructed film, but that doesn't mean it isn't absolutely totally fascinating to watch. I like it for that. It's just so interesting.
I think what happened really was that we all saw Tales of Earthsea.
Mm. I have not seen Tales of Earthsea.
I have not either.
Really? Don't.
It's
on Netflix.
Well, you can't. You can't watch it because it puts you to sleep, and you you watch it if you need a cure for insomnia. It works better than melatonin.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, like Hope, you and I were sort of commiserating on Twitter a short while ago about Ponyo. But I saw Ponyo at the premiere at a couple of years back when it premiered at the
El Capitan?
No, it wasn't at the El Capitan. It was at a film festival in Westwood. I can't remember what the damn name of the film festival was. I think it might have just been Los Angeles Film Festival. But I saw it, and when it ended, my first thought was, "What the fuck was that?" And the people,
exactly. I was angry when I finished Ponyo because I was like, I was so bored. And I was not bored during any stretch of My Neighbor Totoro and Porco Rosso, and those have some big stretches of flat in them. Or the sequence in Howl's Moving Castle where two old women walk up the stairs. Almost the entirety of Ponyo, including the parts that are supposed to be spectacular, kind of made me angry because they weren't going anywhere.
Well, that tsunami sequence is pretty special, but the rest of it is just magical storytelling that sounds like he's just telling a rambling, pointless, going nowhere story to his kids just to get him to fall asleep. And while I can appreciate that,
he can end it very suddenly. I was actually really taken by how many of the complaints you guys were issuing about Howl's Moving Castle applied to Ponyo.
Yeah, they apply to Ponyo, but Ponyo doesn't have anything interesting to say. It has nothing to say, in my opinion. It's got nothing. I think when I reviewed it, I was generous to it. I gave it like a B because I understood what he was going for. He was making a children's film. A movie for children. And I would imagine if you sat a 4-year-old down in front of Ponyo, he'd really enjoy the colors and the animation and enjoy the fact that it's, you know, kind of sporadic and spontaneous. And that's neat and everything. But as an adult, I want at least a coherent narrative. And I didn't get that. But when the point of the story is when I stood up and I was talking, I saw it with Egan, our news editor. And the people behind me were like, "Oh, I think that was better than Princess Mononoke." And I turned around and I was like, "You think so?" And they're like, "Oh, that was just spectacular. It was one of the best movies I've ever seen." And when you go to a premiere, there's always a lot of that. The energy in the room is so super hyper positive that it's a little ridiculous, the hyperbole that people have. But I thought that was just nuts. But it at the same time, sitting right in front of me was the lady who played George's mom on Seinfeld, because she's in that movie. So there you go. Had that experience. Enough about Miyazaki. But speaking of disappointing theatrical films, I saw Legend of the Millennium Dragon, which is Sony Pictures' big anime release for this fall. That comes out next Tuesday on Blu-ray, and it is not good. It is from the director of Spriggan. I don't know if any of you have seen Spriggan.
Yep.
Yeah. Hope, have you ever seen that?
I passed on it,
no. Yeah, okay.
It didn't look like they had any reason to watch. There wasn't anything that, you know, invited me to check this out at all. Well, so.
Spriggan Build itself is a really kinetic action movie, but it was just so ugly and gross, and it wasn't animated all that well.
Yeah.
So it kind of failed on every level.
Right, so Legend of Millennium Dragon isn't a failure, and it's not a failure. It's not a bad movie, but it is one of those movies where it's so painfully generic. The story is, okay, stop me if you've heard this one before. It's ancient Japan, and there's magic and demons, and the world is being threatened. Cut to modern day. What do you think happens?
Somebody from the present falls down a hole or something. Oh, and
let's see. A magic wardrobe
are you
shoots
psychic?
Out of a well.
Are you psychic? Because that's what happens. A wimpy, dorky guy gets sucked into the past who just doesn't think he can be a hero. fuck! Anyway, so I quickly switched to 1.5 speed, and it's... Everything that happened, like, you don't even need me to tell you the rest of what happens in this movie. He doesn't think he can do it, and then he does it, and there's demon fights, and the end. He controls Orochi, the eight-headed dragon of legend, and turns out some of the good guys aren't really good guys. Uh-oh. It's painfully generic. There's a love interest, yada, yada, yada. The animation, technically... is nice. It's nice and fluid. It's Studio Pierrot working on a theatrical budget. They do a nice job. The film is not attractive. The character designs are all very, very similar to each other and not good looking. The monsters are... they're sort of an attempt at literally animating ancient paintings of Japanese Oni, like you see on the scrolls. Literally, they tried to just animate that, which doesn't really translate that well. To animation, but that's what they were going for, and it's just kind of ugly and weird looking. The design of it overall is just not a very attractive film. I wouldn't recommend it. It's long, and everyone takes forever to say what they're going to say, and it's very slow, and it's super obvious, and just, I didn't go into it really expecting much of anything. I didn't know even what the story was about. But I knew it was a big budget release, and Sony picked... You know, generally Sony puts out decent stuff, and this was not good. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're curious, you know, give it a rent. But, if you get something out of it, I'd be amazed.
Reminds me a lot of when I watched Brave Story. I don't know if anyone else has seen that.
No, but it's probably a very similar thing.
Yeah, that was Gonzo's attempt to basically do exactly the show you just mentioned. Instead of ancient Japan, it's generic fantasy realm. But apparently it was based on a book that won a bunch of awards, and then the movie is as boring and generic as you can possibly get.
Yeah, I have to, like, sit back and wonder, like, so when the director or the screenwriter gets tasked with, okay, it's feudal Japan, except there's magic, or it's a fantasy world that's in peril, and, you know, a high school kid gets sucked into this world, like, do they just, like, roll their eyes or just, like, take a nip from their flask?
Can
like,
I just,
right.
Yeah, every time I want to be, have some sort of spider sense of whenever that's being pitched, I just show up randomly with a copy of Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Yeah, really. It's been done, guys.
Uh-huh. If you can do it better than this, sure, but you're not.
They've even done the twist where the guy gets sent back to fantasy land or feudal Japan except with magic and is an asshole and fucks everything up. I mean, that's been done, too. So it's like, it's a tired, tired story, and I wish they would stop with that shit.
Maybe we can call this film The Funeral, and maybe they'll never do it again.
I don't know. I don't know how... I didn't really hear much about it. It premiered at Anime Expo, and I didn't even know. And
yeah,
nobody...
actually, I remember seeing that press release and being like, it did?
What is this? Yeah. Apparently, it premiered there. I heard absolutely nothing about it. I didn't even know it happened, and I didn't see any reviews coming out of AX. So, Who knows? Just made absolutely no impression on anyone, which stands to reason, I suppose.
I wonder if those kind of stories start out as maybe somebody, maybe some young upstart really does have, like, an idea. What if we, you know, did this really amazing move? Like, maybe the impetus for this movie was, let's do these monsters from these ancient, like, these ancient scroll paintings, like the Oni or whatever, and have them really, really move like they do, like it's a real painting, kind of like Okami or something like that. Wouldn't that be neat? Okay, but we need a story. And then somehow this gets, like, waylaid for several months, and somebody picks it up and says, okay, well, we can pour some money into this, but what do we do? A kid falls down a hole in the future and comes back to the past. Brilliant, we'll do that. Like, maybe that's what happens. It starts out as a great idea, and then nobody does it. And then they just, okay, we'll give it the treatment that we know people will, you know, be accepting.
Well, there's always room for something that's been done before, so long as it's still well done, or even some, you know, slight interesting take, which, I mean, in this film's case, it sounds like it was supposed to be, the animation was going to make it interesting and worth watching, but from what you're saying, it just looks chunky and ugly.
It's one of those things where great animation, bad design.
Yeah,
bad design. You will only notice the great animation if you know what to look for, but the bad design is so distracting that, I mean, it's not hideous, it's just so dull and just bland, and yeah, ugh, that's like the only way I can really describe it. It just, yeah, it's just a nothing. It's just nothing. It just sits there like a log, so.
That's too bad. I mean, Sony's usually got a pretty decent, especially recently, they've been picking either, you know, Satoshi Kon's new movie or stuff like Tech on Kin Creed, or
yeah,
they've kind of gone to the well and picked up stuff like Memories, and I don't know, seeing put something out that's pretty half-assed is kind of sad.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, and you know, Bamboo was making that same comment, like, oh, this is from Sony, it might be something special, and it's like, nope. But anyway, so yeah, Legend of Millennium Dragon, not great. There's that, and I just wanted to throw this out there. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago I've been watching the Star Wars Blu-rays, and I finally popped in Phantom Menace, and gotta tell you, second movie is the worst one. Attack of the Clones is, I would say, substantially less watchable than Phantom Menace, which is a bad movie. It's a bad movie with horrible acting, but it is nowhere near, I don't think it's anywhere near as dull as Attack of the Clones. And I used to,
I hate sand, it gets everywhere.
yeah, but I didn't expect
that
reaction.
I just remember the scene where they open up on like this meadow, and I'm like, they're not gonna do it, are they? They're not gonna romp. They're not. Oh God! They're romping.
Frolicking. I don't want to talk about this for too long. I just want to point out, I did not. The Phantom Menace is it's a bad movie, bad dialogue, not as bad as the second one, and also not quite as horrible as I remember it being. But anyway,
I was just going to interject real briefly that they say, you know, you have a trilogy or even a three act film. The beginning and the ending are the fairly easy parts, and you get to the middle, and then you have trouble. In the case of George Lucas, you know, who's not accustomed to writing anything halfway decent to begin with, it's probably
got to give him American Graffiti. Come on.
Well,
THX 1138's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that was dull too. But I don't know. You know, you have a middle part. You have a middle film where pretty much nothing happens, and after a first film where pretty much nothing happens. So, ouch. I don't know. I guess that makes it worse.
Whatever, anyway, that's enough about Star Wars.
Nerds talking about Star Wars on the internet, film at 11.
Okay. All right, so, Hope, before we get to Twitter here, you've got an ongoing project I didn't want to mention, just in case our listeners have not heard of this. You are producing something sort of interesting. You're making a Fruits Basket radio show, like a sort of a radio drama?
It's not one of those things you can easily compare to what anything else anybody's doing right now, but yeah, it's like The Shadow, that those kind of old radio dramas where everything would be, where everything, actually it's not a whole lot like that. It's a little bit more like what Big Finish is doing with like Doctor Who and that sort of thing now, where it's a fully dramatized story with sound effects and actors and pretty much the same thing you would get from watching a television episode of a story, but it's just solely radio because that's the only thing I would have the budget to do. But, it's me and a bunch of actors and composer Foley Guy came together and we decided that we were going to do an adaptation of Fruits Basket, the manga, that way. So it's solely based off the manga, not the anime. We kind of wanted to come away from that. I would go into details, but that's boring, I guess. And yeah, it hasn't been doing as well as I'd hoped, so I kind of want to get the word out about it. But if you're interested in radio drama at all, or if you're a fan of Fruits Basket, you definitely want to listen to this. But it is so... I don't know, audience-wise, it's not doing what I'd hoped it was doing, because I guess nobody's really doing anything like this right now, and people don't know what to make of it, but production-wise, I'm really, really blown away with the caliber of talent that I'm getting to work with, and how good this is sounding, so I definitely want to get that out more, I suppose.
Okay, well, where can people find this thing?
It's furbadrama.weebly.com. I guess you can put the link in the description and stuff. And so that's the home site for it, and that's where you can find the downloads and everything. We've been hosting it on thatguywiththeglasses.com as well, and you can find it there, but it's probably easier to navigate the home site, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get to Twitter. All right, Shiro Shishi asks, are there any anime debates that get your blood boiling, or have you seen them all? I've been doing this so long that I would say nothing legitimately gets me actually angry anymore. Even the whole, like, as a fan, this copyrighted product created for profit belongs to me thing still kind of makes me go, I hate you. But other than that, I mean, there's a lot of stupid debates out there, but I don't actually get, like, seriously angry. I feel like I have kind of seen everything at this point. Anyone else?
If there is a new anime debate, I would love to see it. That would be interesting.
I mean, I think, like, the current trend debate is actually just now kind of falling off is the piracy versus anti-piracy, I guess, thing. But, I mean, you know, everything kind of comes and goes. I don't see, like, the dub-sub argument anywhere near as often as I did, like, 5 or 10 years ago.
Well, there's no more dub, so.
There's that. I don't know. I get kind of fake angry about something just if I feel like people want to have a debate about it. So, just for entertainment's sake. But not really. I mean, it's just entertainment, so I don't feel the need to get really angry about anything. There's still all sorts of manner stuff you can banter about, but nothing to get my hackles up about, no.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, when you're a new fan and you're just seeing all this stuff for the first time and you can't believe some people's attitudes towards some things. I mean, yeah, it's easy to get worked up, but in terms of blood boiling, no. My blood is not boiling. All right, Wayne01. Okay, I touched on this earlier, but if Justin, Mike, Daryl, and yourself are the League of Super Nerds, does that make this the League of Super Nerds International? I'm gonna go with we're the Warriors of Plasm.
Yay! Is that a reference to something?
It is. You're all probably too young to know what I'm talking about.
I'm Googling this right now.
I'll leave it out there for everyone else. Okay, invalid name. What emerging anime-related subcultures, stuff like Vocaloids or visual novels, are you keeping an eye on? Well, I keep an eye on all of that stuff because it's kind of my job to know what that stuff is. Gia, you're the same way. Brian, do you actually care about any of that stuff?
Not really. By the way, I had to cover the Hatsune Miku panel at Otakon.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a panel. It was a product pitch. He had a bunch of people in a crowd, and he just played a bunch of news footage that everybody had already seen from the Anime Expo concert. And then at the end, he was like, I've got CDs for $30 and DVDs for $20. And everyone rushed up the stage with their wallets. And that was the panel.
Wow. Okay. Well, wow. Someone's buying something.
I'm always a little surprised because, like, I love all the creativity that comes out of the Vocaloid stuff. But I really can't stand listening to them that much. I mean, they just sound like... I think I've said this on the podcast before, but they just sound like really excessive auto-tune to me. Like,
oh,
I don't really get into the audio of it.
Like, I'm not going to beat around the bush. The Vocaloid music is bad.
They just use the same irritating samples you heard in dubstep in 1992 and just loops it ad nauseum. It's not good.
No, it's not good. But it's software. They're trying to sell stuff, so...
It's a neat idea, just like being able to make a song out of nothing, because, you know, that's cool and it empowers people. And that's all well and good. It's not something I want to subject myself to. But it's neat to see this kind of open source movement around this thing.
Yeah.
and to see it get embraced relatively by the creators.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Just don't let me listen to it ever.
Hope, do you care about any of these side subculture things?
Well, not so much on the Japanese end of things. I don't really touch into the Miku thing or anything like that. I'm really not for that kind of thing. But I kind of have to keep up with a lot of the fan work that's being done, like over here, like a bunch of Abridged series and stuff like that, just because I kind of work with those people a lot. And so, I cross over and talk to, like, the guy who does the Dragon Ball Z Abridged thing did a cameo, a couple lines in the radio drama recently. So no, I keep up with that pretty heavily. And it's amazing how much work those people put into something that they get, you know, kind of I don't want to say respect, because that's not really the right term, but like the fans are demanding, and they're like more and more and more, you know, dance for us, monkey kind of thing. And then they have copyright people on them a lot of the time for, quite frankly, something that shouldn't be a legal issue. And they keep doing it. So I don't know. I kind of have to admire that persistence in them. And so I do want to support what they're doing. They're just kind of trying to have fun, and it seems like even trying to have fun and put a lot of work into it is still really far too difficult on the internet. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that the one thing that I do have an interest in outside of just anime and manga is light novels. I'm very interested to see in how light novels start to fare here, because I kind of had the wrong impression of them before they really started to release a lot of them here. And now it's like, all right, these are actually kind of interesting, and even shows that I don't necessarily like Spice and Wolf. You know, I'll read a chapter or two of it, just mainly just because I like to read. But I don't know, it's kind of neat and cool, and I hope more of those start coming out.
Yeah, I always feel weird reading light novels, because I'm like, this is not the language. I'm a big language person. If I'm going to read a book, which I don't read as much as I used to anyway, I really like to indulge in like the use of language, or like Ray Bradbury's what's it called? Something Wicked This Way Comes, that kind of thing, where you just kind of indulge in how something is being written rather than what's actually happening. And I can't do that with a light novel, because it's like, yeah, this was in Japanese.
Well,
and
they're
I don't
not
know
intended.
What I'm reading, you know.
Yeah, well, they're not intended to be really florid for the most part. I mean, because they're light novels.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. So
it's like a breezy, you know, James Patterson paperback. It's just you flip it open and in 2 hours you're done.
Yeah,
it's young adult, but not necessarily just for young adults.
Yeah.
The one series I really do want to read has not been brought over here, and it makes me really sad, is Bakano, because I've read, I guess, little fan translations of certain chapters, and the way it's written is, you get the idea of why they did the show the way they did, because it's first person, and it's like all dialogue, and it's not, there's not really any exposition. It's like a page from the journal of this person, or a conversation heard behind an alleyway in this date, and you have to keep up with the dates to know what's going on, and it's just really staccato, and, you know, it's very bulleted, and I don't know. It looks like a fun kind of read, like putting a puzzle together. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with
like
you.
The Hadahi novel, actually. It's kind of interesting, actually, now that I've compared the light novels to young adults, because it seems to me that in English language literature, most of the really interesting stuff and all the money is being thrown out in young adult. And I wonder if that's also true in Japan with light novels to some extent, because it seems like a lot of the, not obviously the best literature, but some of the most creative sort of attempts. And maybe it's just because I only hear about light novels, though.
I don't think you're too far off base with that. I think that's pretty true.
Okay. All right. XB Saint asks, best basic cable venue for anime, Cartoon Network, FX, other, or none of the above?
FX shows anime? What?
That's news to me. You know, maybe he means G4, because they show the Marvel stuff. For a while there, Sci-Fi was probably the best place. If you wanted to see something, I don't know if they still do the anime, but they were showing.
I think their block recently stopped. Yeah. I don't know that it was the best place. It was. I really now I just watch everything on the internet. But when Sci-Fi first started doing that block, I think I didn't have a real reliable internet connection. I was still living with my folks or something, and it was really hard to watch things on Sci-Fi because the commercial breaks were so invasive. Like, they would be, like, during a really serious, especially, like, now and then, here and there, you couldn't watch that show on cable, because halfway through, like, a dialogue scene, it would start to fade out, like, you couldn't hear the last line of dialogue, and then, boom, commercial, and there were four commercial breaks in a 23-minute show, and then when it wasn't having a commercial break, there were these huge lower thirds that they they didn't even cover the screen. They squashed it. It was really hard to, like, take anything you were watching seriously, especially if it was serious, like Monster, now and then here and there. So, I don't know. Definitely, I'm not really missing, since I have the internet, I don't really miss anime being on cable. I don't, you know?
Yeah, for that reason, I would still say that Adult Swim and Cartoon Network are kind of the best bets for anime on basic cable, just because yeah. Adult Swim doesn't do any of that stuff. They only do the one commercial break. They don't have giant, enormous pop-ups telling you to watch American Idol every 3 seconds. And
Warehouse yeah. 13. Yeah. Right.
Actually, every time I saw that ad, because I was watching anime, I would think of that episode in Full Metal Alchemist when they visit the haunted warehouse, and I'm like, oh, no, two different venues.
Right. Yeah. I do not watch anime on basic cable, although I think X-Men's going to be on G4 pretty soon, so I'll try and catch that. But, I guess Adult Swim is still the best place if you need to watch it on cable. All right. Nana K Fan asks, with the license of Persona 4, this may be a good discussion, how important is it to keep an original dub cast? Do you think Sentai should make the effort and make getting the original cast back a priority, as they were incredibly well-liked?
They were, but nobody cares, really. I mean, how many cartoon shows? Yeah, that too. But I mean, how many cartoon shows did you watch as a kid where the voices changed midway through or whatever? You know, people might be upset, but for the most part, unless it's a famous voice, it's not the sort of thing that people are going to get too riled up about, honestly.
No, I don't think it's going to affect sales. I think people who are going to buy it are going to buy it regardless. They'll whine, but they'll buy it. They'll get mad, though, because, you know, I had dub fans. These aren't children. These are full-grown, you know, man-children who are really big fans of a certain dub cast or whatever. They'll get angry, though. I mean,
I'm not saying they won't get mad. I'm saying that it's not going to, honestly, like, there's just going to be some kerfluffle for the first 2 weeks when they find out that either it's not going to get a dub or they're going to dub it and not get all the same people. So,
yeah.
This is one of those things where there's a small but vocal group of people that make it seem like it's a big deal. But the reality is, nobody except those people care. And when they speak for themselves and themselves alone. It's not like one guy complaining means 500 people feel the same way. A long debunked myth about feedback. Unless you care, unless you're a big fan of the dub, and specifically that dub, and you really want to hear those characters sound like that, that's it. Then this affects you and no one else. So, personally, like, it depends. Like, I think it's good when they can. Like, it's good to make those people happy, because the people who don't care won't care no matter what you do. But it's, you know, if you can make those people happy, great. But it has to be cost effective. It's got to work into the budget. It's got to be sensible, reasonable, and easy, you know, not make a lot of work for a lot of people. You know, if you can do it, great. But if not, eh.
Well, and the other thing that people need to keep in mind is that, you know, sometimes these actors, they move or they get a job somewhere else, yeah. Or the pay is not good enough anymore. Like, for some reason, sometimes people forget that they have more of an attachment to those characters than oftentimes the actors do, to be perfectly honest.
Well, it's a job.
Yeah, it's totally their job, and they come in and their job's done, and even if they get asked back, they're not always going to do it.
I remember when there was a little bit of an uproar when it was like, Media Blasters isn't going to get the original cast for Ikitosen. It's like, cannot tell you how much the people who really watch, who love Ikitosen, are not watching it for the dub voices. Ridiculous. Okay.
Well, that dub wasn't the show was horrendous. The dub itself wasn't even good, so who cares?
Yeah, well. All right, Captain Red Ram asks, looking forward to any of the new anime coming out this fall. Gio?
Hey. I'm kind of interested in Chihaya Furu, which is the one about the gal who plays the card game Karuta. Less because I'm interested in the card game, more because the manga is, you know, like, won a billion awards and is really very popular in Japan. So I'm curious to see what that's all about. I'm staring at the list right now. I'm kind of been, like, cramming on this. but yeah, that's probably top of my list.
Anybody, Brian, anything?
Honestly, I glanced at the list and nothing really stood out to me initially. So I'd have to give it another look over to kind of get my bearings on it, because there wasn't anything that was like must see on my radar.
I'm curious to see what they're doing with Hunter x Hunter, just to see what that is, how that's gonna go. Go ahead.
People generally speaking, because like I said, huge fan of Yu Yu Hakusho, great anime. I think it's really phenomenal shonen stuff. And Hunter x Hunter was written, same author, afterwards. And so a lot of people told me, Hunter x Hunter, have you checked that out? I'm like, no. And I think by logical extension, well, if he cut his teeth on Yu Yu Hakusho and he's more familiar with the formula, maybe Hunter x Hunter is better. You know, it's probably going to approach some of the same themes and stuff. That's good. So, but I never really had the time for it. So if they're remaking it and it's going to be better animated or whatever, then that's kind of cool. So that's actually my number one this time.
My thing with the new Hunter x Hunter is that, I don't know, because the manga itself wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination anyway, and the original show to me was about as good as you can adapt that manga, so I don't know, it's not like a Full Metal Alchemist thing where I'm just like, how the hell are they gonna do that, you know? But
actually that reminds me, Hope, you've mentioned Yu Yu Hakusho a couple of times, and I was recently searching for a complete set, an affordable complete set of Arjuna, Earth Girl Arjuna, because I really wanted to revisit it. And so I went down to I remember my local Book Off had a bunch of singles in their bargain bin. So I went down to Book Off, and sitting in the bargain bin was a big chunk of Flame of Rekka.
Ha!
And Hope, have you ever seen that?
No. I mean, I know of it. I haven't actually watched it. It was on, like, one of the Stars channels real briefly.
Yeah, really?
Well, yeah, that and I remember it being there because it was right next to, like, something else called Blazing. It was a Shonen-Eye. It was, I don't know. Again,
oh,
I know.
Mirage of Blaze, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mirage of Blaze. Thank you. There. So, and I was like, okay, fire hour, I guess. And, yeah, but I never paid attention to it.
Okay, because it is the, like, world's most blatant Yu Yu Hakusho ripoff. Like, it is just a Yu Yu Hakusho ripoff. That is its only quality. That's the only way you could describe it. And the animation.
Oh, come on! I just looked up the art. Wait a minute. That's the exact same poses on the promotional.
It's very lazy. And I hadn't thought about that show in 10 years. And I saw those DVDs. And I'm like, oh shit, Flame of Rekka. If you can track it down for like a buck a DVD or whatever, I would really be curious to see your take on it, because it is such just an unashamed, yet, well, this worked for Yu Yu Hakusho, so here it is again with slightly different character designs and sort of ginned up, oh, but it's different, see, because of this minor change that we've made. But yeah, anyway, I totally forgot that Flame of Rekka existed, and well, there it was.
I'm totally going to watch that now, actually.
In terms of fall shows, things have been pretty nutty for me lately, so I'm going to find out on Saturday what I like and what I don't like.
Just looking at the list, the only one that I'm probably going to watch is Ungo, which is the new Seiji Mizushima show, but I'm going to be cautious because Oedo Rocket was so weird.
I loved Oedo Rocket. I honestly like Seiji Mizushima's sense of humor more than I do his drama, quite frankly. Although both are good, but I mean, like, if I had to choose between Oedo Rocket or Gundam 00, I'm going to watch Oedo Rocket.
Well, nobody's going to blame me for that.
Yeah, that's probably true for everybody.
The Future Diary, Mirai Nikki anime is also this coming season. I'm curious about that because I know a lot of people really dug that manga. It's sort of this thriller thing where a bunch of people see the future in their cell phones written as though it was part of their diary, so they all have kind of incomplete information, and of course they all have to, like, kill each other or something.
Oh, Production IG has a show that is apparently extremely, like, nationalist. I think it's called Guilty Crown or something like that. That is apparently, like, Japanese routing, invading, you know, the invading West or something like that. So that'll be it'll be interesting to see if it causes some kind of uproar.
Well, Code Geass.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually looking at it, the writer is the same writer for Code Geass. So there you go.
Yep, that's awesome.
Wonder if he's got a chip on his shoulder about something.
You think?
Okay, Sewing Rose 11. Any thoughts on the Sailor Moon manga's recent release and best-selling status? Applause. Great. We all knew that would happen. I'm happy it's back out, and everybody seems to be really enjoying it, aside from crazy fans who are nitpicking it for really retarded reasons. The usual stupid overreaction to minor changes
doesn't fit with my older volumes.
Yeah, whatever. You know, if that's the biggest problem in your life, congratulations, you don't have any problems. Like, good lord. Happy. Hooray. Yay.
I've been loving the Nostalgia Fest. Like, I don't know that I would be very excited about going back and rewatching the Sailor Moon anime, but I am thrilled to go back and read the manga because I never finished it. like the first time it came through. So I'm really excited to have the chance. I read through the first volume the day it arrived, and I really dug it. So yay.
Cool. Okay. Wraithnor asks, do you think recent low quality of dubs is a problem of economy or the industry giving up in face of piracy? Well, there's a lot of weird assumptions and personal beliefs in that question now, aren't there? Anybody want to take that?
It's economy. It's mostly economy. They're just, you know, the dub studios that are still around aren't...
Are dubs suddenly... So the premise here is that dubs are suddenly not as good? Is that...
Yeah, yeah. Which is also bizarre. I don't know where that information...
I would need to know where that's coming from, because that...
I don't think that that's accurate, but I was ranting about it on Twitter recently, so I don't know if this was just targeted at me thinking that it was going to get me riled up. I noticed recently that there was a dub coming out for Squid Girl, and I saw some of that, and I had been listening to a lot of the recent stuff from Sentai, and that's all Stephen Foster right now, and I never had anything against this guy until now.
Really?
I hadn't been paying attention. The only one I saw was like Le Chevalier d'Eon, and that one didn't suffer much. But now that I'm listening to all this stuff, it's just really, really the stuff coming out of Sentai under him, under his direction. It's really, really, really lazy, and not in the way that I'm used to, which is let's just take the Japanese script and have them say it out loud and it'll sound kind of awkward, but that's okay, we got to get through this. I almost prefer that to what he's doing, which is like he's changing it intentionally, so it's not really anywhere close to the Japanese, and it still sounds bad. Like Funimation, they change stuff pretty radically every once in a while. Usually it's kind of, sometimes it's an improvement. Yu Yu Hakusho, good example. That's really old. They changed the script entirely for that, and it's better than the Japanese show. But he's changing, the dialogue, so everybody sort of sounds snarky, and everybody sounds really whip smart and cracking jokes at each other, and it completely ruins the tone of, you know, these really serious, downplayed, subtle scenes. So... yeah, that's just Sentai. So, no, I don't think dubs are getting worse. I don't know what that's coming from. That should bring better
perception. There's fewer of them, and there's more Stephen Foster jobs in percentage to the rest of dubs now, just kind of by sheer mathematical luck. So I guess you could make that argument really stupidly. But, dubs aren't any worse than they ever were. In a lot of ways, the average quality is pretty much there. I mean, for as much as we're shitting on Stephen Foster, it's not like his work is uniformly god-awful. It's not like he's doing Garcy's Wing on all of us, you know? It's just whatever.
Yeah. No, I mean, part of the Stephen Foster thing is, you know, he does everything there, and so I imagine he gets super punchy. I'm sure his work schedule is crazy. And they're trying to save money by just using the same people for everything, so... Yeah, I mean, okay, so Sentai's dubs are kind of, because they're all by the same dude who has a reputation for fucking with stuff just for the sake of fucking with it, and that kind of sucks. But overall, no, I mean, I don't think Funimation's dubs are bad or anything like that. I don't really agree with the premise. Okay, so Prague Shell says, talk about the new TV season, and he's referring to American television. Has anybody watched any of the new shows this season? Anybody? I don't think any of you are as big a TV junkie as I am, but...
New Breaking Bad.
Well,
I still watch Project Runway. That's pretty much it.
Well, I think he's referring to new stuff, like premieres of new shows.
Yeah, unfortunately, no. The only thing that I keep up with is, I guess, Doctor Who, and that's kind of iffy, so... No.
I'll watch the new... want to watch the new Michael Mann show on HBO.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just going to be a bunch of surly dudes being surly.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I've watched a bunch of the new stuff. I tend to watch all new sitcoms, at least the pilot, because I'm a sick man. due to unforeseen circumstances... I was back home recently, and my mother really wanted to watch that dinosaur show on Fox.
Oh, Terra Nova.
Terra Nova, and it was...
How was it?
Awful. really, really awful to the point where it looked like it had been shot and designed in, like, 1998 and then released now, because the special effects are super wonky. They're very old-looking. Bad old CG. It's, like, really poorly composited.
You're supposed
to Dinotopia 2.
Yeah, you're supposed yes, Dinotopia mixed with a little Earth 2, if anyone remembers Earth 2. But it's, you know, you're supposed to give a shit about this family and you don't give a shit and the dinosaurs look like crap and it's the bad guy in it, or the stern military leader, is the bad guy from Avatar playing the exact same character in the exact same situation. So, gruff military leader here to tell you that this planet's going to tear you apart. And it's just... Oy, Gavalt.
Eat your eyes like jujubes.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And that I realize I'm supposed to like that Zooey Deschanel sitcom, but I kind of don't because I find her quite irritating. Yes, you're very quirky and adorable, Zooey. We get it.
This is going to be creepy, but I had a dream once where Zooey Deschanel cooked me a pasta salad and it was really delicious. And then I woke up and I was really angry that reality had taken hold.
He didn't have any pasta salad.
And I woke up and my crocheted blanket was gone.
Right.
All of my soy products have been replaced.
Okay, Nikki Negative. Ever notice that older fans still bitch about Overfiend ruining anime's reputation? Like that was what
this
kept
was
them. Like that was what kept them from leading normal lives. Legend of the Overfiend is a little bit funny bit of history at this point, but I didn't notice that older fans complain about it having ruined anime's reputation.
It's such a bizarre footnote at this point. I mean, Overfiend was only kind of notable in the fact that it... I mean, and this just shows you how fucked up the 90s were. That movie got a theatrical release. Not a big one, but, you know, if you look online, there's an old review from the Washington Post from, you know, 1994 or whatever, saying, this is disgusting, horrible nonsense. Don't see it. yeah, and so anime was hyper-violent tentacle porn, I think, to quote MST3K for a while. But, you know, like, who cares now? Now it's something completely different. Now it's just a bunch of, you know, there's different anime stereotypes that the world has moved on to. Big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard. I'm considered an old timer myself, and I know a lot of old timer fans. I haven't heard anyone complain about Urotsuki Doji destroying anime's rap in Jesus forever, a very long time. So I guess this guy has heard it at some point. And yeah, no, I couldn't comment because I haven't experienced it myself. Crazy Koban asked, with creative anime, Madoka, Tiger and Bunny, being more financially successful, do you think more original anime will come out?
I would argue that Tiger and Bunny is not creative at all. It's just successful because it's exceedingly well done in every regard.
Yep.
It's exactly the sort of show that we all like, honestly. The elements are completely cribbed from other places. It's just assembled perfectly.
Right.
But so it's not really, it's original, but it's not really original, you know?
I guess by creative, he just means good.
Oh, well, yeah, that we all like that.
Yeah. I think if there's another big trend to awash the otaku community that hasn't shown up yet, it just hasn't shown up yet. So kind of in between crazes right now, because I don't see anything really big trend-wise sweeping the production side of anime, and like all anime has to be about this right now. So,
yeah, I mean, look, if those shows both seem to, at least from what I know about Madoka, I haven't seen it, but I've heard nothing, really nothing, but even from people who don't generally like that kind of thing, you know, good things about it. And this was my big takeaway from Tiger and Bunny. If they've decided that the screenplay is really important and story is really important and let's focus on story again, instead of just database plug-in shit in otaku will pay for, I am 100% in favor of that. I will weep tears of joy if we get more really well-written shows. Because that's what I want. That's what I focus on the most is story.
Well, when I sat in on the Tiger and Bunny panel, that was actually something the producer specifically mentioned. He was like, yeah, he's got this idea for the show, but once he had the idea, he actually said, this really needs to be well-written, so we need to take our time on the script and get our best writers in for this. And they did. And turns out the show's great. Everyone loves it. Who would have thunk?
Yeah. So more focus on the screen. If they decide, yeah, let's pay attention to the script. Fantastic. That is what I've been, you know, speechifying about for a long time. All right. Ben the Bear asks, have you ever felt waja because of other anime fans? And I guess that means embarrassment by proxy.
Every time I walk by the huge line for the rave at Anime Expo or Otakon, that's pretty much it. But, yeah.
I run through and high-five all those people, and then I run away. But I don't actually go in.
You touch them? You touch them. The disease is in you now. That's you have bad. The disease in you.
Maybe I'll just spread whatever I have onto them. Maybe
right. Yeah, I mean, yes, of course, I've felt embarrassment by proxy. Like, people do really embarrassing things. And at conventions, you know, when someone's just being a giant immature jackass, yeah, it's kind of cringe-inducing, and it's like, oh, God. But not to the point where I let it get to me or anything.
Yeah.
It's not like I go
if
back
to the...
If
you'd let it get to you, like, you probably would have killed yourself by now.
Yeah, I mean, sure. you are a worse person than whoever you were embarrassed by, and this kind of goes back to the Uratsuki Doji thing earlier. Like, if you have to seriously at some point in your life say, anime is not just tentacle porn, reevaluate your life. Because you just had to say that out loud. And if you at some point have to say, anime fans aren't just a bunch of glomping people in suits and signs and stuff, then just find something else to do.
Well,
it's
I don't,
not for you.
I mean, there's plenty of people in my life where I have to explain what I do for a living, and they have preconceived notions about what it is. And I'll, you know, maybe you're talking about someone who actually gets mad about that. But, I mean, I've had to calmly say, oh, well, it's not all like that. I mean... You know, it's a pretty diverse group of people, and the content's pretty diverse, too. You know, like, just explaining it. You mean, like, people, who get mad about that.
Yeah. Like, it's one thing, because that's not who I am, and it's not who you are. It's not who any of us four talking right now are, and we know that's not how most people are. So none of us get mad or upset about it. It's just, you know, we're like, take a more relaxed attitude to it, which I think is something everyone should do at some point. Even if you're into that stuff, just be relaxed about it.
Yeah. Never hurts to chill.
Yeah.
Unless there's like a fire or something. Well, even then, good to be calm. Okay. GW Otaku asks, what a recent anime that soundly surpassed your expectations? Anybody have one off the top of their head? Because I kind of don't.
Well, I just mentioned Cashless Sins earlier.
Oh, Redline. Redline totally blew my expectations out of the water, and I was expecting the greatest thing I've ever seen. So, there you go.
Is Gurren Lagann recent enough? Because I actually was really impressed by a lot of aspects of it. Just kind of not even so much just the show, but the feeling around the show as fans were watching it. Just the kind of sheer excitement and that sense of optimism in the face of kind of what I feel is an increasingly cynical internet world. So I would give Gurren Lagann that stamp.
Yeah, I was going to ask if Higurashi was recent enough, so there you go. That's
sure.
Really
well,
not
whatever.
Recent at all.
If you saw it recently and it blew you away, there you go.
Oh, about a year ago, yeah. I came into it with that whole feeling of, oh, great, it's another one of those, a thing where they're trying to subvert the visual novel moe trends by making it really violent or making it, and it's not really subverting it at all, it's just copying for a different audience. But it was really well written. It was, the characters were likable, and it was scary. And anime isn't really scary most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's gory, sure, but, you know, the gory moments in Higurashi are very few and far between. And mostly it's just you waiting for something to happen, and it doesn't. It fakes you out, and, you know, the use of sound. I'm a big geek for sound design. One of the reasons I freaking love Chris Nolan is because I can listen to his movie instead of just watching it. And you say same thing with Higurashi. You can kind of close your eyes for a minute, and the sound tells the story for you. So, yeah, I mean, I was kind of blown away by that because I didn't think it was going to be any good at all. The animation's still pretty poor, but, you know, the storytelling was there.
All right, Modern Rocker Corey Proft from the Beta Male podcast asks, what's your favorite film so far from this year? Anime or otherwise? Brian, you have a favorite movie yet?
I just saw Moneyball, and I loved it. So that's pretty damn near the top of my list so far. Just kind of going back, I honestly don't think of anything that's like nearly as good. As far as just like general all-around favorite, man, I don't know. Just go with Moneyball. I really liked it. It was a good movie. Really good, actually.
I want to see that, but all my friends are like, baseball movie?
It's totally not about baseball. It's just a bunch of dudes being men and disagreeing with each other, and it's superbly well acted. Ah, it's so good.
Awesome.
Gia, your friends don't really strike me as film connoisseurs who would understand that it's
not. No, they're not, but that's because we mostly go to movies on $3.50 Thursday, so we go see whatever crass, horrible thing is eligible for the discount.
Yeah, okay.
I saw Transformers 3 at the Dollar Theater yesterday. It sucked.
Oh, God.
Well, it was only a dollar. I guess it's not.
Yeah, I know. That's why I sat through the whole thing.
Go back and demand my time back. I really hated Transformers 3.
I still haven't watched it.
Oh, God.
It sucks.
You don't
it's not
say.
As bad as the others,
because I thought
still
maybe
sucks.
It didn't. Because I thought, like, for a second, maybe that won't be a really horrible, juvenile, violent waste of my time, of my precious remaining life.
It's 2 hours and 37 minutes of shit.
Oh, my God. Okay. Anyway, so, Gia, do you have, like, something you saw that, like, stuck out as, like, the best movie you've seen this year?
I got to see Hoshio Okoromo, the new Makoto Shinkai movie at Otakon, and I really liked it a lot. Although there are definitely some moments where you're kind of sitting there going, oh, Miyazaki. But it, by and large, was a really fantastically entertaining film, and I cannot wait to get that one out on some media out here in the U.S. For non-anime stuff, I really liked X-Men First Class a lot better than I expected to. Mm-hmm. And the other surprise enjoying film for me was Hannah, that I dragged some friends to after.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
I really liked it.
I totally agree with you there. I totally forgot about Hannah. Hannah's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Yeah. I really liked that one a lot. Hope, favorite movie?
Right off the top of my head, probably. Although I saw a lot of good movies. Captain America was a good movie, but it just didn't grab me. I guess I like my superheroes a little cornier. I don't know. Because I laugh more at Thor, even though it kind of had some lapses in tone there. Probably Rango, actually. I almost forgot about it. But I wasn't really expecting Rango to be any good. And then because the ad campaign for that movie was awful.
Yeah,
it really
bad.
Was. Like,
yeah.
It had no idea who it was advertising to. So I was like, are they trying not to make any money? Because I thought it was going to be awful. And then when I saw it, it was, you know, it was really visually, and it's kind of what you expect sort of from Tim Burton, and then you find out he's not behind it, and you go, oh, okay, good.
It's much more visually inventive than anything Tim Burton's made in the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought the plot was still there. People were like, oh, the plot was cliche, and I was like,
no,
not
good.
Very. Not
well,
really.
It is in a way, but, like, it's done in a clever, cute, fun way, and I kind of avoided Rango for a while because I fucking hated all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and those are all Gore Verbinski's fault. Eventually I saw Rango, and yeah, it's so much fun. It's great.
I honestly, like, can't believe that movie got made, because it's not a kid's movie at all, really. Aside from the fact that it's animated, it's really not written for kids. It's not... It's a love letter to Westerns, and it gets very meta, and it's slow in parts. I think it's a piece of art. Like, I really loved Rango. I think it's an achievement in terms of animated films. Having said that, my favorite movie, and I really enjoyed... Brian, did you see Drive?
Yes, I did.
I liked it a lot.
Me too.
I thought it was really cool. It's a cool movie. Like,
super cool.
I don't like usually describe movies that way, but that's the word I would use to describe Drive. It is a just unfailingly cool movie.
The soundtrack's cool. The look is cool. It's just got cool people in it, and they do cool stuff.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. but hands down, no, not even a question, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Fucking loved that movie. Cannot wait for it to come out on Blu-ray. We're not into the part of the year where they release the really good movies, so Moneyball's kind of the first one out of the gate.
So.
Yeah, we're getting into award season. Once we get into October, November, December, that's when all the heavy hitters come out.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Oh,
yeah,
man.
There you go. And although I have absolutely no interest in the books or anything, can't wait for Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, because it's solely because it's David Fincher. And he's an absolute genius, and so I really want to see that just for him. Also from Corey, do you schedule out time in your week to sit down and watch anime, or do you just do it whenever? I schedule time. Gia and I both likely watch anime because it's our job, and so it's part of my workday. I schedule it because it's part of my workday. When I'm not working, I'm generally not watching anime. I don't know, Gia, if that's the same for you.
Yeah, I mean, I often have something on kind of in the background, or if I need to sit down and watch something more closely, obviously I set everything else aside. So I wouldn't say I set aside like a specific time. I don't say, oh, I am watching anime from 10 to 11 a.m. every morning or anything like that.
I will pick a day. I will pick like a day. Like, okay, Thursday is the day I'm going to have time during my work day to sit down and watch this thing. You know, that's as far as I'll generally go. But it's during the hours when I am working. But that obviously is different for Brian at Hope. So Brian, what about you?
Well, if there's something that I'm like, I feel like I'm really behind on that I need to get cracking and see, then I'll do that. Like, I'm trying to find a way to finally actually watch the Trigun movie because I haven't seen it yet. so I got to go down and pick that up. But for the most part, it's just, you know, whenever I'm done with everything and it's late-ish at night and before I go to bed and I feel like watching something, I'll watch it. You know, chances are 7 times out of 10, it's something anime related. And if it's not anime related, it's, you know, an episode of Breaking Bad or a movie.
Man, Sunday's Breaking Bad was so fucking good.
I haven't seen it yet.
Shit, dude. You're going to lose your mind. It is so amazing. Anyway, sorry, Hope. What do you set time aside, or how do you do this?
No, I usually wait until I can grab somebody. So it's going to be like in the evening. Because especially if I know it's going to be bad, I want to rebound off other people. Usually if I'm watching something, it's because I'm going to review it. I don't really watch things for shits and giggles as much. But yeah. And I want to make sure that whatever perception I'm getting off of this isn't, you know, completely off the wall from how other people might be receiving it. So especially if I know it's going to be bad and I know I'm going to lay into it maybe harder than I should, I want somebody else in the room so they can, you know, tell me what they're thinking about it. So usually, yeah, I watch when I can get somebody else to watch with me. Pretty much.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, you know, you do get to a point professionally, or at least when you glean something else from this other than entertainment. I only watch anime when it is relevant to my work. So if I'm watching something, it's because I want to talk about it on this show, or I want to write a review. It isn't just something I consume and then move on.
In fact, I start to feel guilty if I'm watching something that I can't do anything else with. It's like, how can I use this?
I mean, I'm not like that with, you know, American movies or anything like that. But with anime specifically, it is it's so ingrained as part of my life and part of my job that it has to be something I can produce something from. Hazukari, Brian, what's the worst flake of the week you've ever gotten?
The guy who wanted to be the Emperor of Lolicon. I think that by far is the worst thing ever.
That was good. Quick comment on I got a comment about this, but quick comment on Legend of the Millennium Dragon. It's dubbed, and I think I recognize some of the voices. No English credits on the Blu-ray. We don't have the list of English of voice actors who are in it on ANN. Nothing on IMDb. I couldn't find a list of English actors.
Is it mostly anime voices, or is it LA and Vanity Post?
I swear I heard an Airs in there somewhere. Some of them sounded very familiar. There's literally no English credits. It doesn't say the studio. It says nothing. So who knows? Anyway, mystery. Weird mystery. Okay, V guy sent in as usual. Really long question that we probably don't really have time to get into that much. But I'll just read this, okay? He says, I agree wholeheartedly with Hope's review of Evangelion, that its message in favor of existentialism is abhorrent. However, the problem is that Eva is existentialist is just one viewpoint, currently dominant viewpoint on the show. I agree with her that such a message is horrible, but that message isn't Hideaki Anno's so much as it is the message of a certain vocal fans drastically reinterpreting the movie. Does Hope still think it was pro-existentialist? I think the creators made it anti-existentialist.
Okay. in the one sentence answer, I don't think Hideaki Anno thought, I'm going to put forth an existentialist dogma. I don't think that ever crossed his mind. I think he poured how he was feeling about the characters and about his own life and what he was going through at the time and his reaction to what other people were saying about his show into it. And I called it not existentialist, because that's not accurate, postmodern existentialist, because I needed a name for it when I was talking about it. But I don't think any thought went into that. I think he was just expressing himself, and that's all there is to it.
Right. Well, the reason I like Evangelion so much is because you can interpret it a million ways, as I have said. That's what makes it interesting. That's what makes it art. Okay, so that about wraps it up. Well, that was a lot of fun, guys. Thanks for coming on and shooting the breeze. That was great.
Not a problem.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Gia, Brian, and Hope for coming on by. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, and while you're there, please leave us a review, a little rating. We'd appreciate it.